looks, pleased over our agreement. Something warm fluttered up in me, putting the lid on my earlier anger. Dmitri understood my frustration with the system, but then Dmitri understood me. He glanced around, but there was no one at the desk. A few students in their early teens were working or talking in the lobby. "Oh," I said, shifting the weight of the box I held. "We're in the middle school dorm. The younger kids are next door." "Yes, but Ms. Davis lives in this building. Let me try to find her and see where she wants these." He set his box down carefully. "I'll be right back." I watched him go and set my own box down. Leaning against a wall, I glanced around and nearly jumped when I saw a Maroi girl only a couple feet away. She'd been standing so perfectly still I hadn't noticed her. She looked like she could be mid-teens, 13 or 14, but she was tall, much taller than me. The slimness of her Maroi build made her look even taller. Her hair was a cloud of brown curls, and she had freckles, rare among the normally pale Maroi, across her face. Her eyes widened when she saw me looking at her.
"Oh, my God, you're Rose Hathaway, aren't you?"
"Yeah," I said with surprise. "Do you know me?"
"Everyone knows you. I mean, everyone heard about you. You're the one who ran away, and then you came back and killed the Strigoi. That is so cool. Did you get Molnia marks?"
Her words came out in one long string. She hardly took a breath.
"Yeah, I have two."
Thinking about the tiny tattoos on the back of my neck made my skin itch. Her pale green eyes, if possible, grew wider.
"Oh my God, wow!"
I usually grew irate when people made a big deal about the Molnia marks. After all, the circumstances had not been cool. But this girl was young, and there was something appealing about her.
"What's your name?" I asked. "Jillian, Jill, I mean, just Jill, not both. Jillian's my full name. Jill's what everyone calls me."
"Right," I said, hiding a smile. "I figured it out."
"I heard Maroi used magic on that trip to fight. Is that true? I would love to do that. I wish someone would teach me. I use air. Do you think I could fight Strigoi with that? Everyone says I'm crazy."
For centuries, Maroi using magic to fight had been viewed as a sin. Everyone believed it would be used peacefully. Recently, some had started to question that, particularly after Christian had proved useful in the Spokane escape.
"I don't know," I said. "You should talk to Christian Ozera."
She gaped.
"Would he talk to me?"
"If you bring up fighting the establishment, yeah, he'll talk to you."
"Okay, cool. Was that Guardian Velikov?"
she asked, switching subjects abruptly.
"Yeah."
I swore I thought she might faint then and there.
"Really? He's even cuter than I heard. He's your teacher, right? Like your own personal teacher?"
"Yeah." I wondered where he was. Talking to Jill was exhausting.
"Wow, you know, you guys don't even act like teacher and student. You seem like friends. Do you hang out when you're not training?"
Well, kind of. Sometimes. I remembered my earlier thoughts about how I was one of the few people Dmitri was social with outside of his guardian duties.
"I knew it. I can't even imagine that. I'd be freaking out all the time around him. I'd never get anything done. But you're so cool about it all. Kind of like, yeah, I'm with this totally hot guy, but whatever. It doesn't matter."
I laughed in spite of myself. "I think you're giving me more credit than I deserve."
"No way. And I don't believe any of those stories, you know."
Stories?
"Yeah, about you beating up Christian Ozera."
"Thanks," I said. Now rumors of my humiliation were trickling down to the lower campus. If I walked over to the elementary dorms, some 6-year-old would probably tell me she'd heard that I'd killed Christian. Jill's expression turned momentarily uncertain.
"But I didn't know about the other story."
"What other story?"
"About how you and Adrian Ivashkov are..."
"No," I interrupted, not wanting to hear the rest. "Whatever you heard, it's not true."
"But it was really romantic."
"Then it's definitely not true." Her face fell, and then she perked back up a few seconds later.
Hey, can you teach me to punch someone?
Wait, what? Why would you want to know that?
Well, I figure if I'm going to fight with magic someday, I should learn to fight the regular way, too.
I'm probably not the right person to ask, I told her. Maybe you should, ask your P.E. teacher.
I did.
Her face looked distraught.
And he said no.
I couldn't help but laugh. I was joking about asking him.
Come on, it could help me fight a Strigoi someday.
My laughter dried up. No, it really wouldn't. She bit her lip, still desperate to convince me.
Well, it would at least help against that psycho.
What? What psycho?
People keep getting beat up around here. Last week, it was Dane Zeklos, and just the other day, it was Brett.
Dane. I ran through my knowledge of Moroi genealogy. There were a gazillion Zeklos students around.
That's Jesse's younger brother, yeah?
Jill nodded.
Yep. One of our teachers was so mad, too, but Dane wouldn't say a word. Neither would Brett.
Brett who?
Ozara.
I did a double take.
Ozara?
I had the impression she was really excited to tell me things I didn't know.
He's my friend Amy's boyfriend. He was all bruised up yesterday. He had some weird things that looked like welts, too. Maybe burns. But he wasn't as bad as Dane. And when Mrs. Callahan asked him about it, Brett convinced her it was nothing, and she let it go, which was weird. He was also in a really good mood, which was also weird, since you'd kind of think getting beat up would bring you down.
Somewhere in the back of my mind, her words tickled a memory. There was some connection I should be making, but I couldn't quite grasp it. Between Victor, ghosts, and the field experiences, it was honestly a wonder I could string words together anymore.
So, can you teach me that stuff so I won't get beat up?
Jill asked. Clearly hoping she'd convinced me, she balled her fist up.
I just do this, right? Thumb across the fingers and swing.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. You need to stand a certain way, or you'll hurt yourself more than the other person. There are a lot of things you need to do with your elbows and hips.
Show me, please, she begged. I bet you're really good.
I was really good, but corrupting minors was one offense I didn't yet have on my record, and I preferred to keep it that way. Fortunately, Dimitri came back just then with Miss Davis.
Hey, I told him, I have someone who wants to meet you.
Dimitri, this is Jill.
Jill, Dimitri.
He looked surprised, but he smiled and shook her hand. She turned bright red and became speechless for a change. As soon as he released her hand, she stammered out a goodbye and ran off. We finished up with Miss Davis and headed back toward the chapel for our second load. Jill knew who I was, I told Dimitri as we walked. She had kind of a hero worship thing going on.
Does that surprise you?
He asked.
That younger students would look up to you?
I don't know. I just never thought about it. I don't think I'm that good of a role model.
I disagree. You're outgoing, dedicated, and excel at everything you do. You've earned more respect than you think.
I gave him a sidelong glance. And yet, not enough to go to Victor's trial, apparently.
Not this again.
Yes, this again. Why don't you get how major this is? Victor's a huge threat.
I know he is.
And if he gets loose, he'll just start in on his crazy plans again.
It's really unlikely he will get loose, you know. Most of those rumors about the Queen letting him off are just that. Rumors. You of all people should know not to believe everything you hear.
I stared stonily ahead, refusing to acknowledge his point.
You should still let us go. Or, I took a deep breath, you should at least let Lyssa go.
It was harder for me to say those words than it should have been, but it was something I'd been thinking about. I didn't think I was a glory seeker, like Stan had said, but there was a part of me that always wanted to be the one in the middle of a fight. I wanted to rush forward, do what was right in helping others. Likewise, I wanted to be there at Victor's trial. I wanted to look him in the eye and make sure he was punished. But as time went on, it seemed less likely that that would happen. They really weren't going to let us go.
Maybe, though, maybe they'd let one of us go. And if it should be anyone, it should be Lyssa. She'd been the target of Victor's plan, and though her going alone stirred up that nervous idea about how maybe she didn't need me to guard her, I'd still rather take the chance and see him put away. Dimitri, understanding my need to rush in and take action, seemed surprised by my unusual behavior. You're right. She should be there, but again, it's nothing I can do anything about. You keep thinking I can control this, but I can't.
But did you do everything you could?
I thought back to Adrian's words in the dream about how Dimitri could have done more.
You have a lot of influence. There must be something, anything.
Not as much influence as you think. I've got a high position here at the Academy, but in the rest of the Guardian world, I'm still pretty young. And yes, I did actually speak up for you. Maybe you should have spoken up louder. I could sense him shutting down. He'd discuss most things reasonably, but wouldn't encourage me when I was just being a bitch. So I tried to be more reasonable.
Victor knows about us, I said. He could say something.
Victor has bigger things to worry about with this trial than us.
Yeah, but you know him. He doesn't exactly act like a normal person would. If he feels like he's lost all hope of getting off, he might decide to bust us for the sake of revenge.
I've never been able to confess my relationship with Dimitri to Lyssa, yet our worst enemy knew about it. It was weirder even than Adrian knowing. Victor had figured it out by watching us and gathering data. I guess when you're a scheming villain, you get good at stuff like that. He'd never made the knowledge public, though. Instead, he'd used it against us with a lust charm he'd made from Earth magic. A charm like that wouldn't work if there wasn't already attraction in place. The charm just cranked things up. Dimitri and I had been all over each other and had been only a heartbeat away from having sex. It had been a pretty smart way for Victor to distract us without using violence. If anyone had tried to attack us, we could have put up a good fight, but turn us loose on each other? We had trouble fighting that. Dimitri was silent for several moments. I knew he knew I had a point.
Then we'll have to deal with that as best we can, he said at last. But if Victor's going to tell, he's going to do it whether or not you testify.
I refused to say anything else until we got to the church. When we did, Father Andrew told us that after going over some more things, he'd decided he really only needed one more box brought over to Miss Davis. I'll do it, I told Dimitri crisply, once the priest was out of earshot. You don't have to come.
Rose, please don't make a big deal about this.
It is a big deal, I hissed, and you don't seem to get it.
I do get it. Do you really think I want to see Victor loose? Do you think I want us all at risk again?
It was the first time in a long time I'd seen his control on the verge of snapping.
But I told you, I've done all I can do. I'm not like you. I can't keep making a scene when things don't go my way.
I do not.
You're doing it right now.
He was right. Some part of me knew I'd crossed a line. But just like with everything else recently, I couldn't stop talking.
Why did you even help me today?
I demanded.
Why are you here?
Is that so strange?
He asked. He almost looked hurt.
Yes. I mean, are you trying to spy on me? Figure out why I messed up? Make sure I don't get into trouble?
He studied me, brushing hair out of his eyes.
Why does there have to be some ulterior motive?
I wanted to blurt out 100 different things. Like, if there wasn't a motive, then that meant he just wanted to spend time with me. And that made no sense, because we both knew we were only supposed to have a teacher-student relationship. He, of all people, should know that. He was the one who'd told me.
Because everyone has motives.
Yes, but not always the motives you think.
He pushed open the door. I'll see you later. I watched him go, my feelings a tangle of confusion and anger. If the situation hadn't been so strange,
I would have almost said it was like we'd just gone on a date.
Chapter 10. The next day, my guardian duties with Christian resumed. Once again, I found my own life put on hold for someone else's.
How was your penance?
He asked as we walked across campus from his dorm. I stifled a yawn. I hadn't been able to sleep well last night, both because of my feelings for Dimitri and because of what Father Andrew had told me. Nonetheless, I kept a sharp eye out. This was the location where Stan had attacked us twice before. And besides, the guardians were sick and twisted enough to come after me on a day when I was so exhausted.
It was okay. The priest let us go early.
Us?
Dimitri came and helped me. I think he felt bad about me being stuck with that work.
Either that, or he has nothing else to do now that he's not doing your extra sessions.
Maybe, but I doubt it. All in all, I guess it wasn't that bad a day.
Unless you considered learning about spiteful ghosts bad.
I had a great day,
said Christian, the smallest amount of smugness in his voice. I repressed the urge to roll my eyes.
Yeah, I know.
He and Lissa had taken advantage of their guardianless day to take advantage of each other. I suppose I should be glad they'd held off until Eddie and I weren't around, but in a lot of ways, it didn't matter. True, when I was awake, I could block out all of the details, but I still knew what was going on. A bit of jealousy and anger I'd felt from the last time they'd been together returned. It was the same problem all over again. Lissa doing all the things I couldn't do. I was dying to go eat breakfast. I could smell French toast and hot maple syrup. Carbs wrapped in more carbs. Yum. But Christian wanted blood before we ate solid food, and his needs trumped mine. They come first. He'd apparently skipped his daily blood dose yesterday, probably to maximize his romantic time. The feeder room wasn't crowded, but we'd still had to wait.
Hey, I said. Do you know Brett Ozera? You're related, right?
After my encounter with Jill, I'd finally put some pieces together. Brett Ozera and Dane Zeklos had reminded me of how Brandon had looked the day of Stan's first attack. The disaster of that attack had made me completely forget about Brandon, but the coincidences here suddenly stirred my curiosity. All three had been beaten up. All three had been in denial. Christian nodded.
Yeah, in the way we're all kind of related. I don't know him that well. He's like a third or fourth cousin or something. His branch of the family hasn't had much to do with mine since, well, you know.
I heard something weird about him. I then related what Jill had told me about Dane and Brett.
That's weird,
agreed Christian.
But people get in fights.
Yeah, but there are some weird connections here. And royals aren't usually on the losing ends of fights. All three of these guys were.
Well, maybe that's it. You know how it's been. A lot of royals are getting pissed off that non-royals want to change how guardians are assigned and learn to start fighting. That's the whole point of Jesse and Ralph's stupid little club. They want to make sure royals stay on top. Non-royals are probably getting just as pissed off and fighting back.
So what, some kind of vigilante is out making royals pay?
Wouldn't be the weirdest thing that's happened around here,
he pointed out.
That's for damn sure, I muttered.
Christian's name was called, and he peered ahead.
Look at that, he said happily. Alice again.
I don't get your fascination with her, I observed as we approached the old feeder. Liz is always kind of excited to see her, too, but Alice is nuts.
I know, he said. That's what's so great.
Alice greeted us as Christian sat down beside her. I leaned against the wall, arms crossed over my chest. Feeling uppity, I said,
Alice, the scenery hasn't changed. It's exactly the same as last time.
She turned her dazed eyes on me.
Patience, Rose.
You must be patient and prepared.
Are you prepared?
The switch in subject threw me a little. It was like talking to Jill, except less sane.
Prepared how? For the scenery?
In what had to be a prime moment of irony, she looked at me as though I were the one who was crazy.
Armed? Are you armed? You're going to protect us, aren't you?
I reached inside my coat and pulled out the practice stake I'd been given for the field experience.
Got you covered, I said.
She looked immensely relieved and apparently couldn't tell the difference between a real stake and a fake one.
Good, she said.
Now we'll be safe.
That's right, said Christian. With Rose armed, we have nothing to worry about. The Moroi world can rest easy.
Alice was oblivious to his sarcasm.
Yes, well, nowhere is ever safe.
I concealed the stake again.
We're safe. We've got the best guardians in the world protecting us, not to mention the wards. Strigoi aren't getting in here.
I didn't add what I'd recently learned, that Strigoi could get humans to break the wards. Wards are invisible lines of power that were composed of all four elements. They were created when four Moroi, each one strong in a different element, walked around an area and laid the magic in a circle upon the ground, creating a protective border. Moroi magic was imbued with life, and a strong field of it kept out Strigoi, since they were devoid of life. So wards were frequently laid around Moroi dwellings. Tons of them were laid around this school. Since stakes were also imbued with all four elements, driving a stake through a ward line in the ground pierced the ward and canceled out the protective effect. This had never been much of a concern, because Strigoi couldn't touch stakes. However, in some recent attacks, humans, who could touch stakes, had served Strigoi and broken some wards. We believed the Strigoi I'd killed had been the ringleaders in that group, but we still didn't know for sure. Alice studied me closely with her cloudy eyes, almost as though she knew what I was thinking.
Nowhere is safe. Wards fade. Guardians die.
I glanced over at Christian, who shrugged in a sort of, what did you expect from her, kind of way.
If you guys are done with your girl talk, can I eat now?
He asked. Alice was more than happy to comply. He was her first hit of the day. She soon forgot about wards or anything else and simply lost herself to the ecstasy of his bite. I forgot about wards, too. I had a one-track mind, really. I still wanted to know if Mason had been real or not. The priest's frightening explanation aside, I had to admit Mason's visits hadn't been threatening, just scary. If he was out to get me, he was kind of doing a half-assed job of it. Once again, I started putting more stock in the stress and fatigue theory.
Now it's time for me to eat, I said when Christian finished.
I was pretty sure I could smell bacon now. That'd probably make Christian happy. He could wrap it around his French toast. We'd barely stepped out of the room when Lyssa came running up to us, Eddie trailing behind. Excitement lit her face, though the feelings in the bond weren't exactly happy.
Did you hear?
She asked, a little breathless.
Hear what?
You have to hurry. Go pack your things. We're going to Victor's trial right now. There'd been no warning at all about when Victor's trial would even occur, let alone that someone had apparently decided we could go. Christian and I exchanged brief, startled looks, and then hurried off to his room to gather our things. Packing was a breeze. My bag was ready to go already, and Christian only took a minute to throw his together. In less than half an hour, we were out on the Academy's landing strip. Two private jets sat in attendance, one of which was fired up and waiting to go. A couple of Moroi hurried about, doing last-minute things with the plane and the runway. No one seemed to know what was going on. Lyssa had simply been told that she, Christian, and I were going to testify, and that Eddie could come along to continue his field experience. There'd been no explanation as to why things had changed, and a weird mix of eagerness and apprehension crackled around us. We all wanted to see Victor locked away for good, but now that we were actually faced with the reality of the trial and of seeing him, well, it was kind of scary.
A few guardians lingered near the steps going up to the plane. I recognized them as the ones who had helped capture Victor. They were probably going to do double duty and serve as witnesses and as our protection. Dimitri hovered near the outskirts, and I hurried over to him. "I'm sorry," I gulped out. "I'm so sorry." He turned toward me, his face schooled to that perfect picture of neutrality that he was so good at.
"Sorry for what?"
"For all the horrible things I said yesterday. You did it. You really did it. You got them to let us go."
Despite my nervousness about seeing Victor, I was filled with elation. Dimitri had come through. I'd known all along that he really cared about me. This just proved it. If there hadn't been so many people around, I would have hugged him. Dimitri's face didn't change.
"It wasn't me, Rose. I had nothing to do with it."
Alberta signaled that we could board, and he turned away to join the others. I stood frozen for a moment, watching him and trying to figure out what had happened. If he hadn't intervened, then why were we going? Lissa's diplomatic efforts had been shot down a while ago. Why the change of heart? My friends were already on board, so I hurried to catch up. As soon as I stepped into the cabin, a voice called to me.
"Little Dampierre, about time you got here."
I looked and saw Adrian waving, a drink in his hand. Great. We'd had to beg and plead to go along, yet Adrian had somehow just glided on in. Lissa and Christian were sitting together, so I joined Eddie in the hopes of staying away from Adrian. Eddie gave me the window seat. Adrian moved to the seat in front of us, though, and might as well have been sitting in our row as often as he turned around to talk to me. His chatter and outrageous flirting indicated he'd been sipping cocktails long before the rest of us had come aboard. I kind of wished I'd had a few myself once we were airborne. A wicked headache set in almost immediately after liftoff, and I entertained a fantasy of vodka numbing the pain.
"We're going to court," Adrian said. "Aren't you excited about it?"
I closed my eyes and rubbed my temples. "About which one? The royal one or the legal one?"
"The royal one.
Did you bring a dress?"
"Nobody told me to."
"So, that's a no."
"Yes."
"Yes? I thought you meant no."
I opened one eye and glared. "I did mean no, and you know it. No, I did not bring a dress."
"We'll get you one," he said loftily.
"You're going to take me shopping? I'm going to go out on a limb and guess they won't consider you a reliable chaperone."
"Shopping? As if.
There are tailors that live there. We'll get you something custom made." "We're not staying that long. And do I really need a dress for what we're doing there?"
"No, I'd just kind of like to see you in one."
I sighed and leaned my head against the window. The pain in my skull was still throbbing. It was like the air was pressing in on me. Something flashed in my peripheral vision, and I turned in surprise, but there was nothing but stars outside the window.
"Something black," he continued. "Satin, I think. Maybe with lace trim. Do you like lace? Some women think it itches."
"Adrian?" It was like a hammer inside and outside my head.
"You could get a nice velvet trim, too, though. That wouldn't itch.
Adrian!" Even my eye sockets seemed to hurt. "And then a slit up the side to show off what great legs you have. It could go nearly to the hip and have this cute little bow. Adrian!" Something inside of me burst. "Will you shut the hell up for 5 seconds?" I yelled so loud that the pilot had probably heard me. Adrian had that rare look of astonishment on his face. Alberta, sitting across the aisle from Adrian, shot up in her seat.
"Rose!"
she exclaimed. "What's going on?" I gritted my teeth and rubbed my forehead. "I have the worst fucking headache in the world, and he won't shut up." I didn't even realize I'd sworn in front of an instructor until several seconds later. From the other side of my field of vision, I thought I saw something else. Another shadow darting through the plane, reminding me of black wings, like a bat or a raven. I covered my eyes. There was nothing flying through the plane.
God, why won't it go away?
I expected Alberta to chastise me for the outburst. but instead Christian spoke. She hasn't eaten today. She was really hungry earlier.
I uncovered my eyes. Alberta's face was filled with concern, and Dimitri now hovered behind her. More shadowy shapes flitted across my vision. Most were indistinct, but I could have sworn I saw something that looked like a skull mixed in with the darkness. I blinked rapidly, and it all disappeared. Alberta turned to one of the flight attendants.
Can you get her something to eat and find a painkiller?
Where is it at? Dimitri asked me. The pain. With all of this attention, my explosion suddenly seemed excessive.
It's a headache. I'm sure it'll go away.
Seeing his stern look, I pointed to the center of my forehead.
It's like something's pushing on my skull, and there's pain kind of behind my eyes. I keep feeling like, well, it's like I've got something in my eye. I think I'm seeing a shadow or something. Then I blink and it's gone.
Ah, said Alberta. That's a migraine symptom, having vision problems. It's called an aura. People sometimes get it before the headache sets in.
An aura?
I asked, startled. I glanced up at Adrian. He was looking at me over the top of his seat, his long arms hanging over the back of it.
Not that kind, he said, a small smile turning up his lips. Same name, like court and court. Migraine auras are images and light you see when a migraine's coming on. They have nothing to do with the auras around people I see. But I tell you, the aura I can see, the one around you, wow.
Black?
And then some. It's obvious even after all the drinks I've had. Never seen anything like it.
I didn't know exactly what to make of that, but then the flight attendant returned with a banana, a granola bar, and some ibuprofen. It was a far cry from French toast, but it sounded good on my empty stomach. I consumed it all and then propped a pillow up against the window. Closing my eyes, I rested my head and hoped I could sleep the headache off before we landed. Mercifully, everyone else stayed quiet. I had drifted off a little when I felt a slight touch on my arm.
Rose?
Opening my eyes, I peered at Lissa as she sat in Eddie's seat. Those bat-winged shapes flitted behind her, and my head still hurt. In those swirling shadows, I again saw what looked like a face, this time with a wide, gaping mouth and eyes like fire. I flinched.
You're still in pain?
Lissa asked, peering at me. I blinked, and the face was gone.
Yeah, I... Oh, no.
I realized what she was going to do. Don't do it. Don't waste it on me.
It's easy, she said. It hardly fazes me.
Yeah, but the more you use it, the more it hurts you in the long run, even if it's easy now.
I'll worry about that later. Here.
She clasped my hand between hers and closed her eyes. Through our bond, I felt the magic welling up in her as she drew upon Spirit's healing power. To her, magic felt warm and golden. I'd been healed before, and it always came through to me as varying temperatures. Hot, then cold, then hot, etc. But this time, when she released the magic and sent it into me, I didn't feel anything except a very faint tingle. Her eyelids fluttered open.
What happened?
She asked.
Nothing, I said.
The headache's still going strong.
But I...
The confusion and shock on her face mirrored what I sensed in her.
I had it. I felt the magic. It worked.
I don't know, Liz. It's okay, really. You haven't been off the meds that long, you know.
Yeah, but I healed Eddie the other day without any problems.
And Adrian, she added dryly. He was hanging over the seat again, watching us intently. Those were scrapes, I said. This is a 5-alarm migraine we're talking about. Maybe you've got to build back up. Lissa bit her lower lip.
You don't think the pills permanently hurt my magic, do you?
Nah, said Adrian, head tilted to the side. You lit up like a supernova when you were summoning it. You had magic. I just don't think it had any effect on her.
Why not? She demanded.
Maybe she's got something you can't heal.
A headache?
I asked in disbelief. He shrugged.
What do I look like, a doctor? I don't know. Just telling you what I saw.
I sighed and placed a hand on my forehead. Well, I appreciate the help, Liz, and I appreciate your annoying commentary, Adrian, but I think sleep might be the best thing for now. Maybe it's stress or something.
Sure, why not? Stress was the answer to everything lately. Ghosts, incurable headaches, weird faces floating in the air.
Probably can't heal that.
Maybe, she said, sounding as though she took personal offense at me having something she couldn't fix. Inside her mind, though, her accusations were turned toward herself, not me. She worried she wasn't good enough.
It's okay, I said soothingly. You're just getting your stride back. Once you're up to full power, I'll go crack a rib or something so we can test it.
She groaned. The horrible part is that I don't think you're joking. After a quick squeeze of my hand, she stood up.
Sleep well.
She left, and I soon realized Eddie wasn't coming back. He'd taken a new seat so that I'd have more room. Appreciative, I fluffed and repositioned the pillow while stretching my legs out as best I could across the seats. A few more phantom clouds danced across my vision, and then I closed my eyes to sleep. I woke up later when the plane touched down. The sounds of its engines kicking into reverse startled me out of a deep sleep. To my relief, the headache was gone. So were the weird shapes floating around me.
Better? Lissa asked when I stood up and yawned.
I nodded. Much. Better still if I can get some real food.
Well, she laughed. Somehow I doubt there's any shortage of food around here.
She was right. Glancing out the windows, I tried to get my first look at our surroundings. We'd made it. We were at the Moroi Royal Court.
Chapter 11.
We stepped off the plane where we were immediately hit with wet, blustery weather. Sleet cracked into us, far worse than the flaky white stuff falling back in Montana. We were on the East Coast now, or well, close to it. The Queen's Court was in Pennsylvania, near the Pocono Mountains, a range I had only a vague idea about. I knew we weren't too close to any major cities like Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, which were the only ones I knew in the state. The runway we'd landed on was part of the court's property, so we were already behind wards. It was just like the Academy's small landing strip. In fact, in many ways, the Royal Court was laid out exactly like the school. It was what they told humans the compound was, actually. The court was a collection of buildings, beautiful and ornate, spreading across well-tended grounds adorned with trees and flowers. At least, the land would be adorned with them when spring came. Just like in Montana, the vegetation was bleak and leafless. We were met by a group of five guardians, all dressed in black pants and matching coats, with white shirts underneath. They weren't uniforms exactly, but custom usually dictated that for formal occasions, guardians wear some sort of nice ensemble. By comparison, in our jeans and t-shirts, our group looked like somebody's poor relations. Yet, I couldn't help but think we'd be a lot more comfortable if it came to a fight with Strigoi. The guardians knew Alberta and Dimitri. Honestly, those two knew everybody, and after some formalities, everyone relaxed and became friendly. We were all eager to get in out of the cold, and our escorts led us toward the buildings. I knew enough about the court to know that the largest and most elaborate of the buildings was where all official Moroi business was conducted. It resembled some sort of Gothic palace on the outside, but inside, I suspected it probably looked like any set of modern government offices you'd find among humans. We weren't taken there, however. We were led to an adjacent building, just as exquisite on the outside, but half the size. One of the guardians explained that this was where all guests and dignitaries traveling in and out of court stayed. To my surprise, we each got our own room. Eddie started to protest this, adamantly saying he needed to stay with Lissa. Dimitri smiled and told him it wasn't necessary. In a place like this, Guardians didn't need to stay as close to their Moroi. In fact, they often separated to do their own things. The court was as heavily warded as the Academy, and really, Moroi visitors at the Academy were rarely trailed so closely by their guardians either. It was only for the sake of the field experience that it was being done with us. Eddie agreed with some reluctance, and again, I was amazed at his dedication. Alberta spoke briefly and then turned to the rest of us. Decompress a bit and be ready for dinner in 4 hours. Lyssa, the Queen wants to see you in an hour. A jolt of surprise ran through Lyssa, and she and I exchanged brief, puzzled looks. The last time Lyssa had seen the Queen, Tatiana had snubbed her and embarrassed her in front of the whole school for having run away with me. Both of us wondered what she'd want to see Lyssa about now.
Sure, said Lyssa. Rose and I'll be ready.
Alberta shook her head. Rose isn't going. The Queen specifically asked for you alone. Of course she had. What interest would the Queen have in Valisa Dragomir's shadow? A nasty voice whispered in my head, expendable, expendable. The dark sentiment startled me, and I shoved it aside. I went to my room, relieved to see it had a TV. The thought of vegging for the next 4 hours sounded fantastic. The rest of the room was pretty fancy, very modern-looking, with sleek black tables and white leather furniture. I was kind of afraid to sit on it. Ironically, despite how nice it all was, the place wasn't as decked out as the ski resort that we'd stayed in over the holidays. I guessed when you came to the royal court, you came for business, not a vacation. I had just sprawled on the leather couch and turned on the TV when I felt Lyssa in my mind. Come talk, she said. I sat up, surprised by the message itself and the content. Usually our bond was all about feelings and impressions. Specific requests like this were rare. I got up and left the room, going to the one next door. Lyssa opened the door.
What? You couldn't have come to me? I asked.
Sorry, she said, looking like she genuinely meant it. It was hard to be grouchy around someone so nice.
I just didn't have the time. I'm trying to decide what to wear.
Her suitcase was already open on the bed, with things hung up in the closet. Unlike me, she'd come prepared for every occasion, formal and casual alike. I lay down on the couch. Hers was plush velvet, not leather.
Wear the print blouse with the black slacks, I told her.
Not a dress.
Why not a dress?
Because you don't want to look like you're groveling.
This is the Queen, Rose. Dressing up is showing respect, not groveling.
If you say so. But Lyssa wore the outfit I suggested anyway. She talked to me as she finished getting ready, and I watched with envy as she applied makeup. I hadn't realized how much I'd missed cosmetics myself. When she and I had lived with humans, I'd been pretty diligent about primping every day. Now, there never seemed to be enough time, or any reason. I was always in some kind of scuffle that made makeup pointless, and ruined it anyway. The most I could do was to slather my face with moisturizer. It seemed excessive in the mornings, like I was putting on a mask. Yet by the time I faced the cold weather and other harsh conditions, I was always surprised to see my skin had sucked all the moisture up. The smallest pang of regret shot through me that I'd rarely have any opportunities to do this for the rest of my life. Lyssa would spend most of her days dressed up, out at royal functions. No one would notice me. It was weird, considering that until this last year, I'd always been the one who was always noticed.
Why do you think she wants to see me? Lyssa asked.
Maybe to explain why we're here.
Maybe.
Unease filled Lyssa, despite her calm exterior. She still hadn't entirely recovered from the Queen's brutal humiliation last fall. My own petty jealousy and moping suddenly seemed stupid when compared with what she had to go through. I mentally slapped myself, reminding myself that I wasn't just her unseen guardian. I was also her best friend, and we hadn't talked very much lately.
You have nothing to be afraid of, Lys. You haven't done anything wrong.
And really, you've been doing everything right. Your grades are perfect. Your behavior's perfect. Remember all those people you impressed on the ski trip? That bitch has nothing to get on you about.
You shouldn't say that, Lissa said automatically. She applied mascara to her eyelashes, studied them, and then added another coat.
Just call him like I see him. If she gives you any grief, then it's just going to be because she's afraid of you.
Lissa laughed.
Why would she be afraid of me?
Because people are drawn to you, and people like her don't like it when others steal all the attention. I was a bit astonished at how wise I sounded.
Plus, you're the last Dragomir. You're always going to be in the spotlight. Who's she? Just another Ivashkov. There are a ton of them, probably because all the guys are like Adrian and have all sorts of illegitimate children.
Adrian doesn't have any children.
That we know of, I said mysteriously.
She snickered and stepped back from the mirror, pleased with her face. Why are you always so mean to Adrian?
I gave her a look of mock astonishment. You're standing up for Adrian now? Whatever happened to you warning me to stay away from him? You practically bit my head off the first time I hung out with him, and that wasn't even by my choice.
She took a thin golden chain out of her suitcase and tried to fasten it around her neck.
Well, yeah. I didn't really know him then. He's not so bad. And it's true. I mean, he's not a great role model or anything, but I also think some of the stories about him and other girls are exaggerated.
I don't, I said, jumping up. She still hadn't managed to fasten the chain, so I took it and put the clasp together for her.
Thanks, she said, running her hands over the necklace.
I think Adrian really likes you, like in a wanting to be serious way.
I shook my head and stepped back. Nope, he likes me in a wanting to get the clothes off the cute dampier way.
I don't believe that.
That's because you believe the best about everyone.
She looked skeptical as she began brushing her hair smooth over her shoulders.
I don't know about that either, but I do think he's not as bad as you think. I know it hasn't been that long since Mason, but you should think about going out with someone else.
Wear your hair up. I handed her a barrette from her suitcase. Mason and I were never really going out. You know that.
Yeah, well, I guess that's more reason to start thinking about dating someone. High school's not over yet. Seems like you should be doing something fun.
Fun. It was ironic. Months ago, I'd argued with Dimitri about how it wasn't fair that as a guardian in training, I had to watch my reputation and not act too crazy. He'd agreed it wasn't fair that I couldn't do the kinds of things other girls my age could, but that was the price I paid for my future. I'd been upset, but after Victor's meddling, I started to see Dimitri's point, to such an extent that he'd actually hinted I shouldn't try to limit myself that much. Now, after Spokane, I felt like a completely different girl from the one who'd talked to Dimitri last fall about having fun. I was only a couple months from graduation. High school things, dances, boyfriends, what did they matter in the grand scheme of things? Everything at the academy seemed so trivial, unless it was making me a better guardian.
I don't really think I need a boyfriend to complete my high school experience, I told her.
I don't think you do either, she agreed, tugging her ponytail straight. But you used to flirt and go out sometimes. I feel like it'd just be nice for you to do a little of that. It's not like you have to have anything serious with Adrian.
Well, you won't get any arguments from him on that. I think the last thing he wants is anything serious. That's the problem.
Well, according to some of the stories, he's very serious. I heard the other day that you were engaged. Someone else said that he'd been disowned because he told his dad he'd never love anyone else.
Ah. There was really no other adequate response to all these silly rumors. The creepy thing is that the same stories are all over the place at the elementary campus, too. I stared at the ceiling. Why does this stuff keep happening to me?
She walked over to the couch and looked down on me.
Because you're awesome, and everyone loves you. Nah, you're the one everyone loves.
Well then, I guess we're both awesome and lovable. And one of these days, a mischievous sparkle danced in her eyes. We'll find a guy you love back.
Don't hold your breath. None of that matters. Not right now. You're the one I've got to worry about. We're going to graduate, and you'll go off to college, and it'll be great. No more rules. Just us on our own.
It's a little scary, she mused, thinking about being on my own. But you'll be with me, and Dimitri, too.
She sighed.
I can't imagine not having you around. I can't even really remember when you weren't around.
I sat up and gave her a light punch in her arm. Hey, be careful. You're going to make Christian jealous. Oh, crap. I suppose he's going to be around too, huh? No matter where we end up going?
Probably. You, me, him, Dimitri, and any guardians Christian gets. One big happy family.
I scoffed, but inside of me, there was a warm, fuzzy feeling building. Things were crazy in our world right now, but I had all these great people in my life. As long as we were all together, everything would be okay. She looked at the clock, and her fear returned.
I've got to go. Will you? Will you go with me?
You know I can't.
I know, not in body, but like, will you do that thing where you're watching in my head? It'll make me feel like I'm not alone.
It was the first time Lyssa had ever asked me to purposefully do that. Normally, she hated the thought of me seeing through her eyes. It was a sign of how nervous she really was.
Sure, I said.
It's probably better than anything on TV anyway.
I returned to my own room, taking up an identical position on the couch. Clearing my thoughts, I opened myself up to Lyssa's mind, going beyond simply knowing her feelings. It was something the shadow-kissed bond allowed me to do, and was the most intense part of our connection. It wasn't just feeling her thoughts. It was actually being inside of her, looking through her eyes and sharing her experiences. I'd learned to control it only recently. I used to slip in without wanting to, much as I sometimes couldn't keep her feelings out. I could control my out-of-body experiences now, and even summon up the phenomenon at will, just like I was about to do. Lyssa had just reached the parlor the queen was waiting in. Maroi might use terms like royal and even kneel sometimes, but there were no thrones or anything like that here. Tatiana sat in an ordinary armchair, dressed in a navy blue skirt and blazer, looking more like a corporate businesswoman than any sort of monarch. She wasn't alone either. A tall, stately Maroi whose blonde hair was laced with silver sat near her. I recognized her. Priscilla Voda, the queen's friend and advisor. We'd met her on the ski trip, and she'd been impressed with Lyssa. I took her presence as a good sign. Silent guardians, dressed in black and white, stood along the wall. To my astonishment, Adrian was there too. He reclined on a small love seat, seeming completely oblivious to the fact that he was hanging out with the Maroi's ultimate leader. The guardian with Lyssa announced her.
Princess Vasilisa Dragomir.
Tatiana nodded in acknowledgement. Welcome, Vasilisa. Please, sit down. Lyssa sat down near Adrian, her apprehension growing by leaps and bounds. A Maroi servant came by and offered tea or coffee, but Lyssa declined. Tatiana, meanwhile, sipped from a teacup and scrutinized Lyssa from head to toe. Priscilla Voda broke the awkward silence.
Remember what I said about her? Priscilla asked cheerfully. She was very impressive at our state dinner in Idaho. Settled a huge spat over Maroi fighting with guardians. She even managed to calm Adrian's father down.
A frosty smile crossed Tatiana's cold features.
This is impressive. Half the time, I still feel like Nathan is 12 years old.
Me too, said Adrian, drinking from a wine glass. Tatiana ignored him and again focused on Lyssa.
Everyone seems impressed with you, really. I hear nothing but good things about you, in spite of your past transgressions, which I'm given to understand weren't entirely without their reasons.
Lys's look of surprise actually made the queen laugh. There wasn't much warmth or humor in the laugh, though.
Yes, yes, I know all about your powers. And of course, I know what happened with Victor. Adrian's been filling me in about spirit, as well. It's so strange. Tell me, can you...
She glanced to a nearby table. A flower pot sat on it, dark green shoots sticking through the soil. It was some kind of bulb-based plant that someone was growing indoors. Like its outside counterparts, it was waiting for spring. Lyssa hesitated. Using her powers in front of others was a strange thing for her, but Tatiana was watching expectantly. After only a few moments more, Lyssa leaned over and touched the shoots. The stems shot up through the dirt, growing taller, almost a foot high. Huge pods formed along the sides as it grew, bursting open to reveal fragrant white flowers. Easter lilies. Lyssa withdrew her hand. Wonder showed on Tatiana's face, and she muttered something in a language I didn't understand. She hadn't been born in the United States, but had chosen to hold her court here. She spoke with no accent, but, as they did for Dimitri, moments of surprise apparently brought out her native tongue. Within seconds, she put her stately mask back on.
Interesting, she said. Talk about an understatement.
It could be very useful, said Priscilla. Vasilisa and Adrian can't be the only two out there with it. If we could find others, so much could be learned. The healing itself is a gift, let alone anything else they can conjure. Just think what we could do with it.
Lyssa turned optimistic. For a while, she'd been going out of her way to find others like her. Adrian had been the only one she'd discovered, and that had been through sheer luck. If the Queen and Moroi Council put their resources into it, there was no telling what they might find. Yet something about Priscilla's words troubled Lyssa.
Begging your pardon, Princess Voda, I'm not sure we should be so eager to use my, or others, healing powers as much as you might want to.
Why not? Asked Tatiana. From what I understand, you can heal almost anything.
I can, said Lyssa slowly. And I want to. I wish I could help everybody, but I can't. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'll definitely help some people. But I know we'd run into other people like Victor, who would want to abuse it. And after a while, I mean, how do you choose? Who gets to live? Part of life is that, well, some people have to die. My powers aren't a prescription you can get filled as needed, and honestly, I'm afraid they would only be used for a certain kinds of people, just like the Guardians are.
A slight tension built in the room. What Lyssa had insinuated was rarely ever mentioned in public.
What are you talking about? Asked Tatiana, with narrow eyes. I could tell she already knew.
Lyssa was scared to say her next words, but she did it anyway. Everyone knows there's a certain, method to how Guardians are distributed. Only the elite get them. Royals, rich people, people in power. A chill fell over the room. Tatiana's mouth settled into a straight line. She didn't speak for several moments, and I had a feeling everyone else was holding their breath. I certainly was.
You don't think our royals deserve special protection? She asked finally. You don't think you do, the last of the Dragomirs?
I think keeping our leader safe is important, yeah. But I also think we need to stop sometimes and look at what we're doing. It could be time to reconsider the way we've always done things.
Lyssa sounded so wise and so self-assured. I was proud of her. Watching Priscilla Voda, I could see that she was proud, too. She'd liked Lyssa from the beginning, but I could also tell that Priscilla was nervous.
She answered to the queen and knew that Lyssa was swimming in dangerous waters. Tatiana sipped her tea. I think it was an excuse to gather her thoughts.